Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Well, today is a first. We are joined by two authors of a best-selling book, High Five Energy, A Different Kind of Founder. I'm delighted to introduce you to Jeffrey Chernick and Alex Gitter. And the interesting thing is that they're not just co-authors. They are cohabitators. And in fact, they're a married couple that just written this book. Super excited to have you on the pod, both of you guys.
Thank you for having us.
We've got two little girls, so it's like a whole...
So it's a family affair. It's like
family affair.
Yeah.
Well, the girls keep that creativity going through the night. I'm sure you wake up and get some nuggets. So this is incredibly fun to have both of you. Jeffrey, you come from serial founder world. Alex, more creative or artistic universe. Tell us the story of obviously how you've met, because everybody is interested about that. But how did that lead to this book and ultimately the topic of the book that you've selected?
Yeah, I'll start. It goes back to Lehman Brothers Investment Bank. If you've ever heard of it, that was my
heard
first job.
Yeah.
My first and last job. Right out of school, I was on the banking team and corporate cash management, and I wanted to share a taxi to work. And this is in an age where it was like a 10-minute taxi or 1-hour subway. It was pre-Uber, as I said, 2007. Why don't I start a website that can, you know, connect me with someone going to the same place at the same time to share a taxi? We launched it. It was sort of my first hit of the addiction of startup life that then lasted the last 20 years. So I've been sort of scaling, starting companies since. I've had an exit. I think I'm going to have my second exit next year or maybe this year, which is actually that first taxi sharing website, which is still evolving as a commuter management software platform. So yeah, I just love coming up with ideas, solving my own problems, and then just doing it. And I met Alex in 2016 at a pretty cool event for a spoken word artist, very LA, word artist named NQ. At his after party.
Yeah. I was on a date with someone else, and the rest is history.
The rest is history.
I knew the guy. Did not know she was on a date.
Yeah. And my background.
We're going to have an influx of entrepreneurs going to spoken word events in New York, LA, and Seattle, whatever it takes now. Okay.
Yeah. And my background, obviously, is I'm an actress by trade and writer as well. And it wasn't really until I met Jeffrey that I realized this idea of not having structure in your life or having to create your own structure wasn't relegated to the acting world, because, you know, actors kind of have to build their lives around, you know, auditioning or, you know, whatever they're up to. It actually extends into the entrepreneurial space as well. And when it came to writing the book, Jeffrey originally, you know, wanted to offer kind of his roadmap that he's, you know, he did a lot of coaching and mentorship, and he wanted to broaden that outreach, give that offer that to a more wider audience. And then from there, I saw the first draft and I said, let me help you.
She elevated. When you read the book, the words, the ideas there, the base layer stories are certainly my lived experience, but the elevation of concept to more of a global theme is certainly Alex's.
To any creative profession. Because basically actors are like good looking entrepreneurs.
For lack of a
I'm gonna
better
steal that.
no,
I'm gonna steal that from you. That's very succinct, and I'll take it. But yeah, the book quickly evolved into this kind of larger offering, right? What started out as little hacks, do this to achieve this, became a wider exploration around what it actually means to be an entrepreneur. What are you going to do if you forego, get employment at a real job to pursue your passion or something that you really care about, a problem that you want to solve? And that, I think, is really where the magic of the book comes in. Then from there, Jeffrey had the great idea of including iconic founders to illustrate not only how these themes are universal, but the lows as well. The ride is universal. So
Kind of so it sounds like the acting career is known to the outside world because as it has its kind of ups and downs until you become famous. And then even then, like people ask, what have you done lately, probably? And it sounds like the founder communities, like Jeffrey and I are part of a serial founder community. It's sort of there's always this quest for staying relevant, kind of using overcoming ups and downs. And finding some kind of meaning in this dojo of whether it's acting or founder journeys. And sounds like you guys have brought this wisdom from folks that have been successful. What have you learned from people who have not been successful, right? And who have maybe pursued serendipity, thought they had the serendipity, and it didn't happen. Because I think that's sort of the business schools. When you ask the business school professors, their biggest problem with lots of books is that it just selects the successful case studies. And sometimes 10 years later, these successful case studies are no longer successful, and it's kind of big embarrassment. And so I think for a lot of people who have running into challenges, in the moment where they're not sure what's succeeded, what's not going to succeed. What did you learn?
Well, it's twofold. I'll say it's twofold. Within the stories that are successful, within those journeys, countless times where it almost went under. Countless. So the book illustrates not the highlight reel of TripAdvisor, for example, or Hotel Tonight, where at one point they offered the investors their money back because it wasn't going anywhere. So like there are these moments where it's not going well, you're hitting your head against the wall, you're running out of money. 15 pivots later, you come up with the idea for Google AdSense. I think that was their eighth or ninth pivot, which was applied to Mandy. It was Eitan Elbaz's story in the book. And it's that correlation that juxtaposes what we think is the journey. We hear that Applied Semantics was acquired by Google for 102 million. It's like, oh my God, that must have been such an amazing journey. But what you don't know is that it took eight pivots. That's eight times they thought about giving up, but they kept going, the perseverance. So I think the biggest lesson in the book was that even for the most iconic companies that you read about and you hear about, they all went through the same journey as the everyday founder that's like hitting roadblocks and thinking to themselves, does it have to be this hard? And it sometimes it is that hard. And then there are also the stories where it just didn't happen. One of the stories in the book is about Knotel, where an amazing sort of like real estate hotel play in New York City, they were crushing, and then sort of COVID happened, and they had the money funding, and they just couldn't get past it. And really, the book is not just trying to create, like, give you a sense of the business cases, but also just more so, I would say, the psychological of the how people got through that and the separation of what I'm working on and me as
So it's
two
just sort of
different.
self-worth, right? Like, so I have the self-worth as a, parent, as a spouse, as a human being for crying out loud. And then this is my startup. And it may go sort of up and down. And maybe even this first one fails. And I'll take those lessons, apply to the second one. And maybe that one will fail. But the third one, Yeah, after eight iterations, right? Eight pivots might succeed. Is that kind of the almost this wall of where you have to separate yourself from the negative feedback that the world sometimes gives you?
Well, that, and, you know, I think too, what the book explores is, what does success really mean? Right. So there's a general narrative about success being $1 billion exit, or you know, not necessarily a billion, but it's very much attached to the bottom line, right?
Yes.
Returns,
yeah.
et cetera.
Yeah.
And what we pose in the book is that all of that has value. But what additionally has value is the entrepreneur who doesn't have the $1 billion exit, the person who has a great business, who's supporting their family and their community. And so in High Five Energy, it's not relegated to these unicorn experiences, right?
Right.
It's kind of holistic look at entrepreneurship, activating every human's capacity to create something, you know, and become a valuable contributor to society and their community.
That's beautiful. So I think what I'm hearing is there's this prevailing narrative, typically coming out of Silicon Valley, New York, maybe like parts of like LA tech ecosystem, right? And that is driven by VCs who do thought leadership and have very particular return profile that makes their business work. And a lot of people listen to, for lack of a better word, like successful founder porn, right? And, you know, like that kind of takes them down the path of doing typically unnatural things and most certainly not looking for some kind of a balance, because the whole business depends on being unbalanced, right? It's being, you know, exponential, right? And first of all, like they will say that, oh yeah, not every business is for VCs, right? Jeffrey, like you've heard that narrative, but then they quickly move on from that. And then they say, well, this is how you become great. And this is that, right? Yeah. And this is the characteristics. And then when you hear, go deeper into the stories, first of all, like oftentimes it breaks down because they can't predict the patterns.
Yeah.
And I think what you brought up is more something that I certainly, like, I'm starting to explore, even with the podcast and the guests that we're inviting here, is I'm way more impressed by somebody who continues to grow as a human being while they're building their business and creates an environment where the people that work for that company come out as better human beings. Maybe making a lot of money and wealth is part of it, but oftentimes, like you would say, let's separate that net worth from self-worth, so to speak, right? Like, and so you're basically giving people opportunities to, you know, do their best work or be their better self, and then they take qualities that they learn from work into their family life, right? And then they become, and this is something that I'm working on, like, hey, if I'm screwing up in the same way as a parent and as a CEO and as a spouse, maybe there's something there to learn for me, and then I could kind of work it out. And if I figure it out in one part of my life, it's going to be better across. So I'm curious, like, what have you learned from all your conversations around this dimension?
First off, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Okay.
He said
beautifully
said.
Yeah,
this is the family motto.
Whether it's professional or being a dad or being work or just the tidiness of your life, it's sort of I think that's certainly a correlation. As you were talking, the main thing that was coming up for me, especially because you talked about the VCs on stage, like money, and even like backed by $200 billion in exits, like money.
Yeah.
There was no real talk of the money when I spoke to these founders.
Interesting.
You know, they talk about, like, I'd ask, what did it feel when you closed that finally, you know, I asked Eitan Elbaz, what did it feel like when he closed, he sold Scopely for $5 billion.
Mm.
And maybe after your second time at bat, you sort of get immune to it. But for him, it didn't outweigh being with his family and having like an amazing day with his family. And those are truly inspirational conversations because we have these fantasies about what it's supposed to be like when we finally get there. And they almost demystified that a little bit because they didn't treat it for the people that I spoke to, and maybe it was the type of entrepreneur that I attracted to this book. Because, you know, taking a step back, what this book is about is when you lean into the thing that you want to do in life and you lean into your passion and the thing that you want to create, you know, when like coincidences start to happen and you meet the right person at the right time and things just sort of fall into place. When you're living that state, that's what we call high five energy.
By the way, I meant to do this. I feel like we need to do a Zoom type of high five. Yeah. Jeffrey, can you join in?
This is a very important note. This is a very important note. It's not the typical like yay high five. It's actually grounded in like the feeling of the like the energy that you feel when you really connect with somebody. And typically where that was born from was, you know, these books like Napoleon Hill, or like The Secret, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, or The Secret, all about imagining something happening so much so that it manifests. So I always had trouble with thinking of an idea and connecting with it, but when I root it in a feeling, like what would it feel like to make that sale, that big sale that we've been talking about? What would the energy feel like? Oh my God, like we did it, we did it, we did it. I'd feel it in my body and it would start happening. And that's sort of that's where the high five energy as a title came from, because that same energy is what happens when you build your mind group, you're talking about it, you're asking people for advice, you're paying it forward, you're going all in, you're just fucking doing it. And when you lean in that way, things just start to roll. And that's, I think, like the message we want to leave to founders and entrepreneurs. And to go back to your question, the through line of all these conversations with founders was that energy of like never giving up, even when it gets tough, about paying it forward, thinking about others, making their employees happy, and it being more than just building a business.
Well, and Alex, maybe kind of a question for you, as you kind of are married to founder and like you work through all this stuff. So I almost feel like there is dirty fuel for a lot of really accomplished people and a clean fuel. And so the dirty fuel comes from fear, not being enough, not being accepted. Like, for example, I come from a refugee immigrant background coming to US, and then that was from Soviet Union, where you had to like really thrive to be, you know, it'd be like the best engineer to get in somewhere and something. And so that kind of like, there's always this legacy of like, you need to always be doing better, achieving more, doing this. And the through line of fear is like, you're never going to really achieve that success that we were talking about. Right. And I think a lot of founders start with a little bit of a chip on their shoulders. Right. And then if the company scales, or if they, as they mature, or as they start having families, and you know, there's different types of motivations in their organization, right? So they need to connect with different type of people. It feels like they're the most successful ones, or the ones that at least I want to quote unquote imitate. It seem to kind of evolve into being driven by purpose, and not just a purpose like, oh, I'm like, I always meant to do the startup type of thing, right? But like a purpose of this meaning, creating something in the world, kind of like having a baby that kind of thrives as this business. Is that what you're referring to? Like that you found that these founders gravitate towards clean energy that comes from that, and less of fear?
I really like your definition. I think that's a very visual and accurate way to articulate what you're talking about. I like that. You're right. You know, we're at an interesting sort of apex of our culture when it comes to not just entrepreneurship, but sort of everything. And I fear being a motivator is huge. across all industries. I mean, talk about acting. So many actors are just want to be loved by their parents. And so they go out and they think, if I can be famous and loved by the world, then I will finally feel that sense of worthiness. So I think
I will
those
be
themes,
enough.
yes, I think those themes are universal. What's interesting about Jeffrey, I can say from the outside as his partner, is he is genuinely a light. You know, he is motivated by joy and connecting with people and wanting to, you know, have the trail behind him be better than when he how he met it. And that's why I married him. That's what inspires me. That's why I aligned to doing this project with him, because I truly am inspired by the love and the goodness that he imbues into not just entrepreneurship, but being a father, being a husband. So yeah, and to broaden it out again, right? That dirty fuel, which I'm going to borrow because I think that's just so brilliant.
Don't worry, I'm sure I stole it from someone. So feel
Well,
free, feel free.
I think that's why it doesn't matter if you sell your company for $1 billion. I think that's why it doesn't matter if your returns are so great, because it won't ever be enough. If your motivation is rooted in fear versus joy or love or solving a problem, then once you solve that problem, once you hit those numbers, there's still more to go because the fear will still be there. And that's what I mean. But I think we're at a sort of crisis of culture. And that's what we hope to shift with this book, is offer anyone, entrepreneur or otherwise, the understanding that their creative essence, their capacity to do something is theirs inherently. Their worth is theirs inherently. And to be a collaborative force for good, for making the world a better place, for enriching your communities, that is the ultimate payback. That's the return that you should be after. And that's the message we're trying to deliver.
Amen.
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 Beautiful. I kind of wanted to you give each other either a little kiss that or like a high, at least a high five, as Alex, as you were telling about these Jeffrey characteristics. That's beautiful. I kind of
I mean, it's true.
I'm gonna share that with my wife and say,
You
hey, I
can.
hope one day I'm gonna live up to you saying something like that about me. I have long ways to go, Jeffrey.
Don't get me wrong. Doing a creative project together with your spouse, you know, we'll be quick to sassy comments, but there's also a level of depth and intimacy, and just getting to know the other person.
Reward.
Yeah.
There is a reward without, not without its challenges.
Challenges. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, not without its challenges, but yeah, it's been a wild ride, that's for sure.
Beautiful. Well, guys, I was as Alex, as you were talking about actors and actresses, which I'm sure all the non-Hollywood types would like to learn about. I'm reminded of this acceptance award by Jim Carrey that came out a few years ago. Do you know what I'm talking about? And
Oh, sure.
we'll put it in the notes, but it goes something along the way, like they introduce him as like, and here's Jim Carrey, two-time Emmy award-winning actor. And he goes, I am Jim Carrey, two-time Emmy award-winning actor. And when I get some when I go to sleep tonight, I'm gonna be not just taking any sleep, I'm gonna be taking well-deserved shot eye, and I'm gonna be not having just any other dream, but I'm gonna be dreaming about becoming Jim Carrey, three-time Emmy award-winning actor. And then everybody's like, ah, and then he goes, because then I will be enough. And all that endless search, and also he just goes on, and it's, I think he's kind of on his own spiritual journey. That's what I figured from
Yes.
that.
Yeah, but
And
he's incredible.
it was incredible to see like the faces drop in the audience, which was like all the famous actors, because this was like the biggest probably counterpunch to a lot of this culture, Alex, that you were describing, that we probably imbue without even reflecting on it, right? Like, and I think the worst part is we're passing it on to our children, right? And if you start, you know, and then towards the end of our lives, most people realize that this is kind of meaningless, or they get sick and this is like all that stuff is pointless, or they retire and they're like, well, this life wasn't like what it cracked out to be, or they, whatever, they get married, they get divorced, or they get married and suddenly all the problems are again, because it's sort of just the beginning of the journey. So the point is, like, we have these, whether it's like a founder that's looking for some sort of a milestone, or broadly a human being, we set these goals for ourselves. And then we kind of, eventually, if we achieve them, we realize they're kind of meaningless. And maybe what's more meaningful is how we go about them. So what have you found, like, your successful entrepreneurs, when they set goals, right? What are they doing? And then how are they measuring themselves? Not looking backwards, right? Like the end of a journey, but throughout the journey to keep themselves going further. And then particularly the ones that have had one or two successes already and sort of have quote unquote proven things, what's the fuel that they're putting into their engines?
It's certainly a spectrum. Mm. It's certainly a spectrum. There, you know, one entrepreneur who had a very, very large exit is thinking about the next one because they don't want to be known for that one giant B, not M, B exit. And you're like, what? They're like, what? You know, so to some extent, so
the chip on the shoulder remains, basically.
Yeah, it's just,
right?
it just depends
it's
on
billion, it's I need a decacore, not a B, whatever. Billion,
yeah.
Not,
and
not
then on the other, on the flip side, I already mentioned Eitan with like Scopely, like he talks about his family when I bring that stuff up. And like, you know, every Friday night he's with his family and that's their tradition, right? So I think the greater lesson is that there is no diehard commonality between everyone we interviewed.
Okay.
I do know that I do a lot of coaching and do a lot of advisory. I feel like half my job as a coach for an entrepreneur is consistently reminding them that this stuff isn't that big a deal long term. Like, relax. Like, this is, you know, every time, because I've been through it so many times where I think I have to do a bunch of layoffs.
Yeah.
And it's the worst feeling in the world. But you know what? You hired good people and they're probably going to be fine. Yeah. And then when you go through that stuff enough and you look back, it's like, wow, I used to have a joke at my, my app Ving. It was a video caller ID app. So I could like, when I call you on Android, I could control what you see on your lock screen.
Yeah.
So sort of like iPhone has call posters. It went viral in India with 20 million users. And at one point we went through a time and we had to lay off a bunch of people. We had a joke that everyone got their dream jobs after Ving. It was like the guy who loved sneakers ended up becoming the head of engineering for like a sneaker exchange. The person who like loved scooters, they worked at Bird. You know, we were a jump off point, but it was going through enough cycles and experience to know that even when I told my lead investor that I thought we were going under, which was the worst fear I had as an entrepreneur, that I was going to lose my investor's money, he looked at me and he said, it's what are we going to work on next? Which was mind blowing because he knew that I was.
Because you're thinking, and this is probably common to a lot of humans, right? Like we're thinking, oh my God, I'm the only one that's going through this shit show that is, you know, life pregnancy, this, that, right? Like startup that's going firing. And then it realized that if you don't share that, and a lot of us hold it inside because we're maybe embarrassed to shame, maybe it's not socially accepted to look like you're not crushing it in every part of your life because, you know, Instagram, everybody's crushing it. You know, the older generation, Facebook, everybody's crushing it. Yeah. LinkedIn, definitely everybody's crushing it, right?
You're watching everyone's highlight reel.
And then the reality. Like I'm married to a French woman and in France, the one good thing is they do like to complain. And so they kind of, but that's almost also like a way, like I complain, therefore I am type of thing. They sort of like, it's still a little bit of ego involved in that, but generally this world that we live in, we get, like you said, the highlight reel and you don't see the messy stuff underneath. And it sounds like that's the common thread. The people that have, like yourself and the founders that you interviewed, they develop ability to kind of handle the messy stuff, the pattern recognition. What are the tools if you're new in this journey, right? And you don't have an enlightened investor, like the one that you said to say, hey, don't worry, this is not the end. What are the tips that you offer? Because one of the things I love about your book is there's like a lot of really applied things in every chapter that people could be doing. So could you kind of share some of these nuggets that people could take away?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is buy the book and you'll get all the nuggets.
All right, so let's talk about that. Tell us, so first of all, this is like one of the best new releases on Amazon.
Number one for starting a business, number two for entrepreneurship, number two for business culture.
Okay.
And you can get on Amazon, all the different sites, Barnes and Nobles. And before we jump there, there's a chapter on meditation. Not everyone likes to meditate.
Okay.
Even if you take 2 minutes and just take a break.
Yeah.
Just taking a moment to just step out. Yeah. And then there's another chapter about being in the moment. And being in the moment is like, what is the thing in your life that you, when you do it, you're just like, is it running? Is it playing music? Is it going out and dancing? Is it just like, is there a certain activity or hobby? What is that thing? And remember to do that thing in the time of the hardest times, because it gets your mind, it helps you create that separation where this is just something I'm working on and it's not me.
Right.
And in order to remind yourself of that, it's like, I love yoga. When I do yoga, I feel, I'm me again. You take a break, go on airplane mode. That's what meditation is. It's really just like an airplane mode to life for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think the reminder ultimately, and what this book explores through Jeffrey's stories and through these entrepreneurs who have had really impressive exits and successes, is humanity. Like, what is the human lens through which entrepreneurship is explored? And once you see that our humanity is ultimately what connects us, our humanity is the same, like all these businesses might be different, who you are in your work life is different, those details are different, but what's the same is how can we bring a more human exploration or a more human lens to entrepreneurship? And that's what we explore in the book, you know? And being able to stay grounded, stay human. I think that's the name of our last chapter, is stay human, for various reasons. You'll see once you read the book. That we pose is kind of the way through to the next phase of entrepreneurship, right? So right now we're at this kind of crisis of culture. There's a lot going on, a lot of shifts happening. What do we want to create in the future that offers stability, not only in the macro, but in the micro, right? And we really believe that supporting your life's purpose, supporting you being the most authentic version of yourself, enriches not only your life, but your community, your family, your business, all of it.
So let's build on this meditation, first of all, double thumbs up. I think the challenge there is the getting in the habit. I think everybody sort of probably tries it at some point, downloads Calm or something like that. Yeah. And then kind of when the crisis is down, you know, they don't need it anymore. Right. And they get back into the same, you know, patterns that weren't that successful. And I would put myself in not even in that category. I never really meditated, but I eventually I tried it and I said, okay, there's improvements. Things kind of, I took a chill pill on a lot of things that were stressful. And then it came back up. And I was like, now I'm working with a coach who says, you really need to, for our work to be more effective, you need to integrate that practice. And one of the themes there is that the more you do it, the more practice you get, the more you create a space between external stimuli and how you react. Kind of what you were saying, between external events and you know, your self-identity, self-worth, so on. So let's talk about that a little bit, right? Like, because it seems to me that the role model of a present parent who doesn't react to tantrums of children in the kind of overreactive ways, or the moment of a founder that gets bad news but is able to kind of not react to it in some, maybe not directly, but comes out backwards, either into family or like chewing somebody out. You know, that these are like really common patterns that we do half the time without even noticing it. And then the moment when you start meditating, you start becoming more self-aware, you start the beginning of a journey where you're like, holy moly, what I thought was intense and being awesome is actually like really, you know, not as constructive of an energy and was unnecessarily harsh. And so meditation is one of the gateways, right, to kind of create that pause. What else have you found, you know, as being alive or other kind of moments that, that helped these founders be more human, be better humans?
I would certainly say the key word that I heard you say is practice.
Yeah.
So we, that's why meditation is called practice, because right. I can meditate for 10 minutes and maybe have like 10 seconds of no thinking, no thought.
Right. Right.
And the moment I'm like in that 10 seconds, oh, I'm doing it. And then it's like thought, you're back.
The monkey mind or whatever.
The monkey brain. Yeah. But yeah. You know, that being able to get there for even that 10 seconds is a great practice, because the next time you do it more. And there's a major correlation between that and being an entrepreneur. And the first time you have 60 days of runway and you don't know what to do is a lot harder than the fourth time you have 60 days right. of runway and you don't know what to do. And that becomes a practice. So one other major correlation that I found between myself and these other founders is just like having a mind group.
Yeah.
You know, people call it advisors or people around you that have been there before. They've right. done the thing. So not your friend that okay. your homies with, that you're, you know, you went to college with and you just like to talk to them about stuff, your bestie, right? Mm. But people that have done the thing that you're trying to do, because that's another theme, is everything we're talking about in terms of entrepreneurship, someone's done the thing yeah. that you're trying to do at some point. Might not be the exact same thing, but they've gone the direction. So instead of trying to like hack through a mountain with a machete to see yeah. if you can get through it, can you find advisors and people in yeah. your community that can help get you there? And by sharing those hard times with those people, sort of like you, it's like a therapist, it's like a coach, you don't have to pay yeah. for it. You'll get the advice you need and the reminders to take space.
Yeah.
And get through.
So basically find peers. Go ahead. Sorry, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, find peers.
I was just going to say, I think too, you know, putting everything into context is important as well, right? So if we're lucky, we get 100 years here. And you know, people say this all the time, and it's hard to totally embody.
Hold on, I'm just going to do some extra walking here while we get my time in. Yeah. So I'm sorry. Yeah. If you're lucky, you get 100 years.
Yeah. And what was I saying? No, I'm sorry.
Okay. You know what? I went for a stupid joke and interrupted your train of thought. And so, I could have known better.
It's into context. Everything is a practice. Right. So these moments where, you know, putting things into context, you have to realize that like life isn't about sustaining a moment for that 100 years, or sustaining a feeling, or sustaining a success for that entire time. It really is the journey, you know? So as corny as it may sound, it's about the journey, not the destination. It's true. You know, entrepreneurship isn't just about getting to the exit or getting to the product or whatever. I mean, that is the goal, but shooting for that goal is what makes it exciting, what makes you feel alive, what makes you engaged in life. So I think putting the struggle in that context and realizing that the struggle also is part of what's creating an enriched experience will help people as well. At least it's helped us and founders in the book.
So like one idea that I want to connect to, double click a little bit on, that you also covered in a TED talk, is everybody poops, which obviously as parents of of young kids, you guys. It's very near and dear to your heart, but it was meant in the context of, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to somebody, you know, and when you do connect with them, don't forget that they're just as human as you are, and they were somehow like traumatized as a kid, and somehow they're all humans, right? Like, and they poop, of course. And I'm curious if you've also seen that about, like, you know, the individual, like, hey, it's okay. I just, you know, I pooped all over myself, or like, I am, you know, I'm kind of not literally, of course, but like, you know, I just right now made fun of myself because I interrupted you, which I knew I didn't want to. But, you know, the idea is that this is sort of, we need to accept that sometimes we could be an asshole. And then we, like, instead of like getting all messed up, we're like, okay, we're not perfect. We're kind of meeting a bunch of poopers, and we're poopers ourselves. And like, we can overcome, like, that makes this journey a little bit more acceptable and fun. Is that what you've been seeing as a pattern as well, or am I connecting on the connected dots?
Yeah, right? I'm both on the internal about me, yeah. where yeah. the imperfection, and I'm just gonna have my moments and have my days and be hungry and be tired, and also, you know, be aware of that, because awareness is the key to change. So as long as I'm aware of that, that's helpful, and also see that in others.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you, this is like sort of related, but it is when someone doesn't hear from somebody, right? Yeah. Like, I have an investor, and they were told me they were going to give me the money this week, and they're MIA.
And it's that's just the me. Story, that's me. Yeah, you start the
stories that we start to tell ourselves about how it's related to something. Did I say something? It's my relationship. Yeah. It's my deal. Yeah. When in reality, 99% of the time, in my own experience, it had never, ever had anything to do with me. It was someone got sick, their company went under, their funding, like, and it's again this like reminder that we're all going through a human experience. And when we take off the pedestals and we're all just remembering that no matter who you are, how senior you are, what job you are, you have a boss. If you don't, if it's the CEO of the company, they're board of directors, and that's their boss. And if it's not the board of directors, they're investors, they're the boss.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's this like cycle of humans going through a human experience. And if you can remember to continually remind yourself of that, things just become a lot easier.
And that's the trick too, right? It's the people know these things, like, we know that everyone's human, we know everyone poops, but having the capacity to let that truly change how you approach something, approach another person, deal with intimidation, that's the trick, really.
That's beautiful. And like, if you allow me, like, I'm trying to connect this to two things. So one is, I create stories in my head that I somehow failed, right? Because the investor is not following up, or the customer is not signing, or this girl that I'm interested in when I'm single, not the back in the days, didn't respond immediately, was, you know, to my, so there's these, we all do this in whatever phases of our life. Or like right now for me, like, oh, my kids like are disrespecting me something. And I'm kind of like, and so that's one, is like, I'm personalizing it, that it's about me. And then in some other relationships, we tend to, you know, particularly maybe in the, you could talk maybe as you see, like in co-founder relationships, you could either give the other person the benefit of the doubt, but sometimes when you have history, we tend to paint a more, you know, repeat, I've been frustrated with this, kind of like a repeat narrative, and you don't necessarily give that benefit of the doubt. And oftentimes it's built up, people don't talk about it, these things, you know, these frustrations kind of build up, and then it kind of comes out, you know, where two people that generally could get along very well and could be more productive start having stories about each other that are negative, right? And so part of that maybe is defending your own self-criticism. You start you know, mentally criticizing the other person, right? And so they're kind of weird. They don't make any sense if you think about it logically. But like you said, we're all humans, imperfect. And so we have these psychological traps. What have you found, you know, in terms of relating to others over a long time? Because it takes years to build a company. You have VCs that last in relationships longer than some marriages, present company excluded, I'm sure. But that's sort of the challenge is like we have a little bit of a society where, you know, swipe right, swipe left mentality takes over. And yet we need to maintain these long-term healthy relationships to do anything meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think you said it beautifully. Again, I we're coming to kind of this moment, right? Where all of these incongruencies, all of these things that aren't really working, these systems that aren't working in our society are kind of coming to a head. So again, being able to recognize that and then implement tools that support perhaps a different intention, a different way of relating to each other. There's an amazing podcast called Where Should We Begin with Esther Perel. And during the pandemic, she actually shifted her model. And instead of interviewing couples, she interviewed co-founders, like people at work. And what was so remarkable is that the dynamicism, the dynamics of the relationships were so similar to that of a couple, of a romantic couple, because like said, there's you get into it with these people. There's intimacy. There's real emotions around success and failure. And are we doing this right? Mm-hmm. And you know, as far as tools, you know, again, I'll pitch the book, read the book. But in general, I think anyone who's well intentioned and desires to connect with their co-founder in a different way just has to decide to do it. You know, decide to hire a coach or someone who can help with company culture, decide to maybe approach something differently. You know, if you do one thing one way all the time and expect to get a different result out of it, I'd say that's a little short-sighted. But if you change it up and try something new, you know, I'm sure you have a lot to say about this.
Yeah. In regards to like the relationships with a married couple versus co-founder, it's communication. Right. Yeah. It's how you communicate. And I try and convey this to all of the companies I've ever started or I work with, is there has to be a level of a culture of communication and openness. So no matter what company I'm running, I'll try and have one-on-ones with employees. And really, I don't show up as the boss. I'm like the homie. I'm trying to be and convey myself as the homie, like you could tell me anything because I want to know what's going on so I could build a better company. If I don't know what's going on because people are telling their some self stories about another person at work, or especially with co-founders, because if the co-founder dynamics start to deteriorate, the company deteriorates, right? So if you can get to a level with a co-founder where if something's brewing, instead of talking to everybody else about it, talk to the person you're in a relationship with. And it's the same thing, like you're in a relationship to anyone else.
Yeah.
And if you can get there, and that's covered in some ways in the book. And I think that really is along the personal journey of the individual. Like I did a program called MITT. It's sort of like ESP, and Landmark is another one.
Okay.
Sort of emotional intelligence program.
Yeah.
But this idea of emotional intelligence and communication, when you talk about with someone, don't say you did this and you did that. It's like, when this thing happened, this is how I felt.
Right. So you own, you're not labeling, you try to focus.
Yeah,
on
you try. This is just how then there's no, you can't tell me that I shouldn't have felt that way. I learned this from my wife, probably most of all, where like she would feeling and I'd come at it like, you shouldn't feel like this is how I felt. You can't tell me
how I should have felt.
Right? Because
I wish I spoke to you earlier, Alex, because I probably did that one despite that same lesson.
Notes, everyone.
Yeah. And this part of the conversation is very interesting because it's beyond entrepreneurship, beyond starting companies. This is just people in relationships with other people,
which is the foundation of entrepreneurship. I mean, that's the big aha, you know, that I think a lot of people who've been in it for a while sort of know, and people who are about to dive in get get to know is that it really everything comes down to relationship. All of this is rooted in how we relate to each other.
Yeah, effectively, like unless you're building that one, the mythical one person AI startup that's the unicorn, right? And then you're chatting with AI, which is like that's a whole other story. But by the way, we could address that. Like how do you because you guys bring in a lot of AI tools into the book, but No AI.
Well, we bring we didn't use AI for editing.
Yeah, yeah. But the recommendations involve how to use it.
Yeah,
absolutely. But like on that note, like first, just a general question, right? So obviously, amazing stuff going on every day, and then people, whether they're founder or about to be founder, they are like trying to keep up with all this. It feels probably overwhelming. There's more FOMO that I've ever seen in my entire history in the tech industry, and I have some white hair now. So like it's really big on the FOMO, and everything is going to change. Everything is going to break. You're going to not have a job. Nobody's going to have a job. Da 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 da. And like I'm curious, what obviously some of these experienced founders went for cycles. We talked about meditation, but what's your take? Having kind of you're recommending it as a tool, but also you're basically writing a book that says be more human. And like focus on the fundamentals and whatever the tech wave is going to be. Like if you do a good job on the fundamentals, it will kind of things, good things will happen. How do I combine those two worlds?
It can go either way. So to answer your question, AI could take all our jobs. Like that's a possibility, right? Ideally it won't happen. I think what it comes down to is the question of why. Why are we doing this? Why are we here? Are we doing it to just have an instantaneous result? Because that's what AI is offering. Use this tool instead. I know this sounds weird, but I had to create a reel for Instagram, and I'm a millennial, like square in the middle, and it took me way longer than it needed to. And I admit that. And the next one I'll make will probably be shorter, and I'll find some AI tool to do it for me and whatever. But I will say the act of creating something, exercising that creative spirit was kind of awesome. And so again, we're at this point where nothing has really been settled. Nothing is set in stone. And so using AI, how we pose it, using AI as a support system to achieve your vision feels awesome, right? It's idyllic because perhaps you don't have the skill set to execute this piece of what you're trying to do, and AI can come in and get you to that MVP really quickly. But again, the broader conversation is that what we ultimately want as a society? And I don't think we have the answer for that yet. Right. So for the individual who has an idea, who wants to pursue something, now is the time to try, because you have every tool at your disposal that you need for success. And I don't mean success like the biggest company ever, but just to see if it actually could work. Right. But, I always say, don't do it alone, like partner with a human, working with someone, having someone to bounce ideas off of, like that. It's the act of creating that feels the most incredible, not necessarily the result of the effort.
So you're more alive in the process of this co-creation, the high five, the grasping high five, right? Like then you are, alone in the room, swipe right type of thing.
That's what I think. I'm sure there's an AI person out there who feels completely different.
Yeah, no, I think, it's all about the person. I'm not a solo founder. I've never been a solo. I've had so many projects, and I usually partner with one of my closest friends. I've started a company with almost all of my friends at this point. I'm like, who's left? And my wife was left, and I started a book with her. And that's just my personality. People say you shouldn't partner with your friends, and that's just not my. Maybe my communication level is so open and high enough where I can allow myself to do that in a better way and end up successful, but. AI is an incredible co-pilot. And that's, I'm using it all day, every day to create my vision, whatever I'm trying to do, just so much faster than if I needed a whole team to do that. So, you know, the 360 that we're going in this conversation to one of your first questions is around AI allows you, there's no more excuse. You have an idea that you've been sitting on your whole life, a product, a service, anything. You could now create it without fundraising for the most part, unless like infrastructure, you know, a giant, like, you know, an engine, but you can create a prototype, an MVP that allows you to test the market to see if it's worth going after. And I think that in that regard, we're at the most exciting time of our lives.
Yeah.
Negating what the potential dark paths are. Which, you know, I'm sure there were dark paths in all the places we've been in humanity for the, you know, centuries we've been doing this. And
I grew up in the Soviet Union, so I think we're not sure. So on that note, so basically AI, what you kind of said, it de-risks a lot of things for you to try stuff out. And I want to quote, for the benefit of our audience, some of the so what some of the guests or the folks you interviewed for the book, what they said. So I'm going to start with Darren Berkovitz, co-founder of Telesign. I see entrepreneurs afraid to make mistakes. They end up paralyzed with indecisions. We made every mistake in the book. We hired the wrong people. We didn't fire them fast enough. We had the wrong pricing. We put the office in the wrong location. But the goal is to make mistake, learn, and move on quickly. So that the AI allows you to make mistakes faster. And then I had the same mindset from Mini Ingersoll, co-founder of Shift. I had 10 times the learning experience running my own startup than I did a large tech company. The intensity, the brain on fire feeling was unmatched. I had gone to business school, but nothing prepares you for being COO like getting your hands dirty and doing it. And then the other quote, Fred Krueger, perfection is the enemy of progress. It can hold you back and lead to trouble. So it feels like this need for being right, safety, you know, perfectionism is sort of the block, like from that, like in that very first chapter, like, hey, lean in, don't go there, go for it. It's no excuses anymore, right? It's all made up.
It's all an illusion.
Yeah.
There is no company that was born out of like, we came up with a thing and there it is. 5 years later, it was up and to the right the whole time. Like that doesn't exist. And if it does, that's the unicorn.
Right.
Right. And if you say it does, it's probably a backstory that we just don't know about.
Right.
And I think really understanding that in our hearts, as these early founders are graduating from college, they're looking for jobs. It's a very, like, the job market's a bloodbath right now.
Yeah.
What's the path forward? The path forward is paving your own path.
Mic drop. Jeffrey, Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Everybody, please find the book. It's called High Five Energy, A Different Kind of Founder. Right there. And apply it. I think what I love about books and knowledge is if it's done in a way where you have concrete ideas and you could start applying them right away, and you heard how many great things you could apply in real time here. So thank you so much for writing it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relayto.com, relayto.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relayto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.